Good morning, everybody. Today is the 14th of August, 2013. And we're working in a treatise on cosmic fire. We're doing cosmic fire web commentaries. We're on commentary number 10. This is, I think, 10A. Yes, that's where we are. We're on page 1220. And we've been discussing the different soul laws. I also had recourse to pull in a little bit from Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, on the law of magnetic, expansive response, and the law of the lower four. So very little was said in either place about them, and I've given some thoughts about them. But what we're going to do is discuss at some point the laws of the soul as a special unit, because there's about 113 pages in Esoteric Psychology too, for the laws of the soul, and it wouldn't be right, I think, to discuss them right here while doing Cosmic Fire. It would be a great diversion, a necessary one though, but still a diversion. We'll come back to that. Here is a tabulation of laws and symbols. It's basically taken from this, as you see, only I expanded it so that it's more visible, right? So here we have the laws and symbols we've been discussing, and now the symbols. The law of sacrifice, the esoteric name, is the law of those who choose to die. I think what I should do here is I'll do this again, as it were, and I'll make it a bit larger so I can write in it. And I think I'll do that. And let's see. Here we go. And bring this up to maybe 14. That shouldn't be too bad. So I'll say that this is for writing. If I choose to write, that is. The law of sacrifice, it's the foundational law of all. I called it kind of the common denominator. Its higher correspondence is the law of repulse. So we give up all that does not serve the group good, the good of the larger whole. And the law of repulse is involved in actually dispersing and scattering those factors, so they are driven back closer to their center. And according to what I might call the law of group affinity, the law of those who choose to die, this is the esoteric name, they choose to die to all that is lower, even though it seems that they are giving up that which is most valuable. They are giving up that which has been cherished by lower desire, or by a lesser, by desire under the influence of lower realization. The symbol, a rosy cross with a golden bird. The rosy cross is created as the white of spirit is added to the red of desire. We know well the idea of the Rosicrucians and the Brothers of the Rosy Cross. And the idea is that at the center of the pain of the cross, of the crucifixion of the man, on whatever cross it may be, but especially on the fixed cross, the rose of consciousness and of love blooms. But then the color itself is rosy, which means that desire has been elevated, purified, into aspiration. We don't know where the golden bird is, but perhaps it is perched at some point on the cross. And we assume this to be the bird of the soul, that which must fly free when the proper sacrifice has been made. And the sacrifice is made through love. The transmutation of the red of desire into the rose of devotion and eventually love. So it is oftentimes devotion which allows one to mount the cross and then finally to extricate oneself from the cross as the free consciousness, the free soul, in this case the golden bird. It is outpouring fourth ray energy, the at-one-ing factor, soul and personality, are allowed to be one. This is the factor of infusion. I think I'm going to make this just a little smaller because I think I'll succeed better in the commentary. This is the at-one-ing factor leading soul infusion. And the harmonizing of the pairs of opposites. Interesting that the Gemini, as I've said, Gemini gives the energy of crucifixion. We've seen that on page 472, excuse me, of Esoteric Psychology, interestingly enough, when discussing the crises. It's 472. Where it is. Here it is, the crisis of the soul in general considered, and here it is, the crisis of renunciation, crucifixion, Gemini. So the pairs of opposites both merge and in a way pull apart. The secondary one of the opposites is subdued and a complete soul infusion occurs. Actually, a type of freedom is achieved for both of the pairs of opposites. But they are no longer in conflict, let us say, but a soul infusion occurs under this. And whenever you have a soul infusion, there's going to be sacrifice. Because the lower factor in our lives, the desire for the elemental life and the elemental tendencies, cannot maintain their prerogative. They have to be given up. Through this infusion, the lower is made sacred, which is another way of translating sacrifice. One chooses to die so that one may have the greater life. One chooses the higher of the pairs of opposites so that the greater life may eventuate, even if the lower of the pairs of opposites must be put in its proper place. So only as desire, the red of desire, is transmuted into the color rose, which raises desire into the sphere of love, I would say it does that, can one really understand what sacrifice is. Well, this is distinctive of the fourth kingdom of nature and of the fourth creative hierarchy, and they are those who maintain a certain rapport with the lower elemental life in order to lift that life, and therein lies the sacrifice. Let's say here, maintaining an uplifting rapport with the lower elemental life, and thereby limiting one's scope of expression. At the same time, dying to all things that constrain the consciousness, dying to all energies and forces which constrain the consciousness. There's so much to be said about it, and when we take this up in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, we will explore it more thoroughly. Right now, we're just giving some ideas that occur. This law of magnetic impulse It is a magnetism. Whoop. Yeah, let's get rid of that. We don't need that, do we? No. It is a magnetism between souls, isn't it? Between souls. And the poles are united again. The vertical poles within the individual or group, the soul and personality poles are married through Libra. And this two fiery balls and a triangle, I think DK tells us this is the original symbol of Libra, which has been degraded over time. And fiery balls are centers of consciousness. See, polar union, what are the poles in a way? Well, there are the vertical poles within the individual, but if we look for the horizontal poles, we have subject and object, apparently divided. But I see that we've actually, okay, I'm going to do this here. In fact, that was supposed to be there. Apparently divided. But, okay, this means I go back. But really you have two subjects which are seeking union. And under this law, they can be united. And the point in the triangle, the higher point in the triangle, is the means of equilibrating the poles and demonstrating what they have in common. So I'm going to bring that over here into the here. Okay. This is, so the, we've not been told what astrological sign is connected with the first, but I think, as I've tried to explain, maybe Scorpio and Pisces and the Plutonic signs are connected with the law of sacrifice. Here it's definitely Libra. There's a radiatory energy. Why radiatory? From the two balls, or from the two spheres, a radiation goes forth, expanding the scope of the spheres until they can meet and merge. And then union is achieved. We can marry the souls of others and become one with those souls as we actually are, and also vertically, soul and personality in the individual or the group can merge. It's the second ray, which is a great ray of fusion and of union. So, second ray of fusion and of union and of identification, recognizing the identicality of subject and object. So this is bringing under the second ray aspect of Libra, true group unity. Okay. The law of magnetic impulse, the law of polar union. Because always in the return of the separated factors which have been divided through emanation, there must be a reunion. And all of this is about bringing about a loving reunion. All this dynamic is concerned with bringing about a loving reunion. So one day there will be only one fiery ball in the whole cosmos. That will be the cosmos itself. Meanwhile, all the apparently divided entities will marry and reunite. If you think about Libra in relation to the process of synthesis and reabsorption of the many into the one. So let's just say, think of the synthesizing planets, of how maybe Saturn will be absorbed into Uranus, how maybe in this solar system Uranus will be absorbed into Neptune. We have two becoming one, and maybe lesser absorptions are occurring along the way. Maybe I've suggested the possibility of Pluto into Mars, of Mars into the Earth, of Earth possibly into Venus. But that leads to another matter, you know, whether Mercury and Venus are absorbed into Saturn first before being absorbed respectively into Uranus and Neptune, but it has seemed otherwise, because perhaps it occurred to me that Mercury and Venus may well complete their required number of rounds before the absorption into Saturn could occur, and they may gravitate immediately towards their planet of absorption. But anyway, through marriage, two become one, and this is the sign of marriage. And this is the sign of marriage, Libra. So there's much more to be said here in relation to the... But it's not about union in form. That is what DK is emphasizing. It's about union in the field of soul. It's about the kind of relationship which exists within soul groups. This kind of relationship exists in soul groups, egoic groups. All right, and it's second ray and Libra, whereas the other one is fourth ray, ending the conflict between the aspects, we might say. And here I might as well fill it in that the when white is added to red, we have rose, a symbol of devotion, aspiration towards love and sacrifice. The golden bird, the symbol of the soul to fly free when there has been sufficient sacrifice of red desire. Add the white of spirit to the red of desire and get rose. Okay. Then the law of service, it's the third law. The law of water and the fishes. And Obviously, the fishes need water. It reminds of the waters of life and the thirsty men, as it's called. And the supply from the life bar abundant has to be poured forth so that the fishes can absorb this. It is described in the other book, Psychology, that we have here a symbol which is very much like Aquarius, but a little different. Inasmuch as the pitcher of water containing all of the many necessary energies of abundant life is upon the head of the man who is perfectly poised, and they are these energies are pouring forth from his head center, pouring out upon the just and the unjust. They are available to one and all, and there's he has achieved a condition in which there is no more strain from holding the pitcher or the urn. So the it's natural to him. It is natural to him to pour forth in perfect poise. Just as the constellations Aquarius and Pisces actually do visually overlap, so we have kind of an overlap here of meaning with Piscean and Aquarian energy combined. But the idea is that in order to serve, something has to be poured forth. So service is a pouring forth. Sometimes deliberately and with effort, and eventually through radiation of what one is. And the symbol describes that the man is poised in this outpouring from his highest center. Always look for the symbols that are placed on top of the head, because they will tell us something about the head center, the achievement of the head center, a certain state to be achieved. I'm reminded there of Sirius Isis, where the throne of mastership is placed upon the head. And this is not the case with Sirius B. So my wife informs me, who studies these things. This is outgoing energy. It's six-ray energy. And there is a focused giving here, a focused uplifting. Okay, I'm going to focused giving and uplifting, and with the sixth ray, there is always a factor of excitement or stimulation. Interesting here that we have a law that's connected somewhat with Aquarius, somewhat with Pisces, and it is the etheric body that is vivifying. It vivifies the dense matter. So the energies in connection with the etheric body vivify that which is heavier and less likely to rise without this stimulation or vivification. When you look at the second ray, it says outpouring, and here we have outgoing. It is a devotion, we can say a kind of devotion to the welfare of the group, rather than to one's own center. So a kind of devotion to the group center. Of the group. And devotion to the group center rather than the individual center. And this decay has discussed. It's the, again, we have the reorientation of desire. The sixth ray is not feeding the acquisition of personal desires. The group becomes important. And let's say here, what the fishes need is always in mind. The fishes are the soul in matter. And water is matter, as we've been told many times from the occult perspective, this is true. It's telling us a lot about occult service because the pitcher of water is on the head, and in and above the head are all centers, or the higher prototypes of all centers below. So it's not like we're in a strictly intellectual realm or something which denies heart or the other faculties, because they are all contained within the head, within the seven head centers, which may be within the head or maybe another seven above the head. There's going to be 21 in all, really. Seven is primary, but when you look to 14, you have two sets, but the 14 often implies the 21, as we will see shortly, because we're going to be discussing 21 approaches, three for each ray. The next law is called the law of repulsion. These first three laws deal with the centralization of consciousness on the higher mental plane. But the next three deal with the spiritual triad as it works its way into the egoic lotus and uses the different petals of the egoic lotus. We are not speaking of any laws here which are specifically active when the causal body is destroyed. Or at least they will certainly be active when the causal body is not destroyed. They may also exist after the causal body is destroyed, but we, to be practical, since esoteric psychology is written for initiates of the first degree, we still have a causal body when we're an initiate of the first degree. So we have to think about these laws in terms of the human being who is still building the causal body. This is called the law of repulse, and elsewhere he also calls it the law of repulsion. But he says it's not the same as the law of attraction and repulsion. The law of all destroying angels. It seems like we have an angel on the first ray, and this is a first ray law, but also that aspect of our soul nature, which responds to the first ray. There will always be, I mean, whatever ray we have, we are always the triangle, and we always have all three aspects of divinity. The symbol is the angel with the flaming sword, and there are, angel guards the gates of, quote, paradise. But what is paradise? There are so many states of higher energy which would seem like paradise to the one who lives in a state of lower energy. But paradise has its dangers, and the form can only take so much. So the angel drives away the unsuitable or the unready. There's a rejecting energy here. Yes, as it says from the angel, its first ray, it's a dispersing factor. And as we read, this act of rejection or of dispersion drives the unit back to to the, how was it said, bosom of the seven fathers. In other words, back to where it belongs. It is involved in somehow upholding a right affiliation in time. There will come a time for all, but affiliation in time, let's just say if someone who is newly individualized tries to join the conclaves of the masters, to give kind of a ridiculous example, that joining unit doesn't really belong yet in time. One day, that unit will also be a master, but not now. And maybe the quality of energy is wrong as well. In other words, the actual ray type. So according to ray and according to preparedness, this angel works. And according to preparedness, the angel works to create harmonious groups devoid of, well, I'll just call it disruptive elements, or elements which, oh, that's elementals, elements which compromise the integrity of the group. Here we have to, this is analogous to the atmic plane, this law, not analogous to, but derives from the power of Atma, and the sacrifice petals are involved, linking it with the law of sacrifice. So it's a Ray One law, and the other is a Ray Four law. The law of sacrifice, Ray One and Four are linked together, and oftentimes these rays are linked together, and death and harmony are linked together. Death following upon the achievement of harmony. This is a very important law, difficult, one which is maybe very difficult for those on the 2-4-6 line, but it is an aspect of the law of love, because the, let's just say, the heart feels the proper harmony. The heart feels the proper harmony, and knows about belongingness. I've sometimes divided the first three aspects into the following words. First ray, being. Second ray, belonging. Third ray, becoming. So the world of becoming, the world of belonging or affiliation, and the world of being, along the first three. So the heart knows what belongs to what. What qualities should be affiliated. Right. And I will just say law of repulse here. The heart knows about right affiliation. Right belongingness. It's not a very great word, but there it is. So the angel, apparently cruel, apparently limiting opportunity, is actually granting opportunity. The angel, though apparently limiting opportunity, is actually granting, through heart realization, increased opportunity. And, you know, to put it in the colloquial, this could be called the law of tough love. Sometimes one has to say apparently unpleasant things and do apparently unpleasant things in order to really facilitate the welfare of the person. I'm reminded of a movie called The Last Samurai, Tom Cruise movie. Actually, very good. I saw it, I think, 5 times. Does that show a little 6th ray or something? Anyway, Japan was in a period of change, and it was industrializing, and the ancient samurai culture was fighting against this industrialization and the adoption of Western modes. And there was going to be inevitable confrontation. And there were troops amassed by the government who were to face these great samurai warriors. They would have no chance at all. They just weren't trained. And Tom Cruise had been imported from the United States. He was kind of somehow making up for his sins in the Indian Wars in America, or at least it came out that way, supporting really the truly rooted cultures. Eventually he became a samurai himself. But when he looked at these troops, he just said, not ready, not ready. Would it have been a mercy for him to say, okay, you have the opportunity to go fight the samurai? And they would have been completely slaughtered. But he recognized that they just didn't belong in that role. They hadn't been properly trained. Later they were trained, and, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, I won't take it away from you, but it's a great film somehow about idealism. I think it's a little bit of an aside, but Tom Cruise, who was a Cancerian, and I think he's got the moon in Leo, and I would guess a Sagittarius ascendant, I think he's really a 6th-ray type in the movies, and tends to play those kinds of roles where idealism is emphasized. So when you're not ready to affiliate with a certain group, and when the presence of your ray quality or your degree of development would be a dissonance within the group and a danger to you, the angel with the flaming sword must repulse you. And likewise, when you're trying to create a certain harmony of realization and harmony of energetic expression in your own system and in your group, you may have to become a repulsing agent of that which does not fit, not out of any state of criticism, but out of a state of love for that which is repulsed. And that has to be remembered. This is somehow an aspect of the law of love. And law that's activated once the Antikarana is functioning, because it derives from the spiritual triad. And if it really derives from Atma, the spiritual triad, how is this law going to come into effect unless the Antikarana is built and functional all the way to that point, to the Atmic point? So these last 3 laws are about that. The influence of the spiritual triad within the soul. And as I've shown you before, I find myself without... okay, I thought that all of these were present, but they're not. The pictures, you know. But I've shown you... what have I shown you? All right, we're going to have a little senior moment here, I think. That's going to be fun. Let's see, where were we? Well, I've forgotten what I've shown you. But I've needed this map to show you, but I can't show you anymore because I've forgotten what it is. Well, anyway, yes, now I remember what it is. Notice the feeding lines. From Atma, the red lines, here I'll show you this, from Atma, the red lines, to the egoic lotus, from Buddhi, the blue lines, from monastic permanent Adam, the green lines. So there is a feeding power that occurs in relation to these petals. And even though the egoic lotus may not yet be destroyed, the Atmic influence can be there, and the Buddhic and the monastic. In other words, the triadal influence can be there. So in this particular case, the Antikarana, which is not demonstrated here, but which has to rise, has to, in a way, go through all of these permanent atoms so that we can access the atomic world, even though we are not yet polarized within the atomic world. The master is polarized within the atomic world and can certainly wield buddhi with ease. But we can only access the spiritual will occasionally, yet it does feed the egoic lotus, and especially so, I would say, after the antikarana is built. Then a kind of triangle is achieved, involving the egoic lotus and the personality through the mental unit and the spiritual triad through the monastic permanent atoms and the other permanent atoms. So it's the feeding power that I'm talking about of the spiritual triad to the egoic lotus, even before the egoic lotus is destroyed. These laws of the soul, laws of group life, will be so important in the age of Aquarius, you can understand. So there we have the first ray energy, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Scorpio strongly involved in the law of repulse. Saturn can be involved as well. There's a rejecting first ray energy. Vulcan, not so much. It's Pluto that is the one who rejects and ejects. So if it says the rejecting energy, let's put that down that Pluto ejects and rejects. So ejects from itself and rejects the undesirable from others. How much, I remember back in the days of doing these esoteric psychology classes, and whenever we studied the law of repulse, we would go through an amazing period where people's lives would start to fall apart. They started to repulse without necessarily using the heart energy in the repulsion. They used it as somehow as a divisive energy. And rather than produce more integrity in their lives, it just seemed to produce conflict. You know how we are. We tend to apply new modalities in an old way before we really understand how they should be applied. The next law, the law of group progress, is a Capricornian law. The top of the mountain top, let's see. I know I have a mountaintop here somewhere. Mountaintop. NMTP. Well, that makes sense. The mountaintop is ruled by this sign. And the individual and the group are elevated there too. And when the individual is elevated, as we've been told, the group is elevated. This is the law of elevation, and all progress together based upon individual effort first, and then realized group effort. It's the mountain and the goat, or might we call it the mountain and the unicorn. On this mountain, it is almost as if the goat would be transformed into a unicorn. But let's see, the goat has become triumphant at least and has climbed the mountain of karma. Its progressive energy, interestingly, of the seventh ray, and is related, I suppose, to the will to evolve of the third ray, the evolving factor. Progressing in the heightening of vibration. And not only does the highest meet the lowest, according to the seventh ray mantram, the highest and lowest meet, but the lowest meets the highest, meets or is elevated to the highest. So this is a law of transmutation. It is alchemical. Transmutation. Maybe we can just make this a little bit wider. We have elevation of vibration through transmutation. Elevation of vibration through transmutation, TRM. And it's going to be an important law in the Aquarian Age, important in the Aquarian Age, even though ruled by the sign which will rule the next precessional age. So, touch one, touch all, rise and raise all, fall and make all fall. These are the things to have in mind here. That individual, and I suppose, you know, ultimately we have to realize that with the right attitude, individual achievement is group achievement. So we are going to find a way etherically, well, let's just say, I think this could involve also the substitution of the higher ethers for the lower. This involves the seventh ray and the etheric relationship, which is always implied by the seventh ray. So the lowest and the highest meet in this case, and through the seventh ray, matter is raised up into heaven. The mountaintop represents heaven. So groups will be raised to new heights, and they will progress together, and we will find that the group is fast. Faster than the individual as he attempts to make progress, because there is group sharing of all benefits. And there's kind of an overlap here, wouldn't you say, between Aquarius and Capricorn. When you talk about group progress, you immediately think of Aquarius, but the idea of elevation, of course, suggests Capricorn. So in the law of service, there was an overlap between Aquarius and Pisces, and here we have kind of an overlap between Aquarius and Capricorn. Neither of the laws ruled by Aquarius per se, but the dynamics of Aquarius seem to be implied. So, you know, you ask yourself, how are you doing in the expression of any of these laws? And do the dynamics of these laws affect you? Are you participating in them consciously? Well, I'm just really saying a few things here. When the mountain and the goat are presented, the struggling goat with two horns climbs to the position where unity and one horn are achieved. Okay. Well, I don't want to leave it, but I have to. We have discussed the law of expansive response. No esoteric name is given. The flaming rosy sun is again suggesting that the rosy cross has risen, has become the rosy sun. The rosy cross, well, I better capitalize it, has become, has risen and become the rosy sun. Free in the world of the spiritual triad. Of course, it is the third ray law, and you can understand that active service could be involved here, adapting all knowledge to service, and the mind expanding to take in the fuller scope of the divine plan as that scope is revealed in the triadal worlds. So, you know, there comes a time when our focus increasingly is in these triadal worlds here, and we attempt more and more to be attuned to them, even though we still are possessed of the causal body, and eventually we will not be. And I begin to think that these triadal laws, I kind of put that here, these triadally originating laws can be utilized after the fourth initiation, because then our focus is within the spiritual triad, and we are no longer limited by that which has been worked up from below. It's part of our acquisition, but our acquisition does not limit us. So we have ever wider response to the life of God, the planetary logos, ever wider response to the energies and life of God, the planetary logos. And we seem to be having an ever-expanding response. There's some Jupiterian quality in this, even though it's the third ray that is the some Jupiterian, and a Jupiterian, sorry. Jupiterian aspect here. The name is not given. I don't know why. The rosy sun reminds us the fact that the sun is rosy reminds us that the true ego is the spiritual triad, and the love factor is present in the spiritual triad. So here we have, you know, this is the preparing to make the adept as one who can adapt all energies. So we have, it's kind of interesting, it's related then to the law of service. Okay, that's what he tells us, to the law of service. But it is a service of a more planetary kind, wider in scope, and service in sight of a fuller understanding of the divine plan. So oftentimes service is given under the impulse of devotion, the sixth ray, you know. And we have the man with the pitcher of water there on his head. And the emotions are involved. But here, when I see the rosy sun, I tend to think that the Buddhic energy would be involved. Remember what he said, this law of expansive response, these laws connect with the inner and larger groups. This one, because of the color rose, connects, I think, with the inner group on the astral plane. the rose is the color of the astral plane, at least in symbolism. So it's using the intelligence in loving service within a very broad and ever expanding perspective, as the third ray tends to give. But we cannot think of it as strictly intellectual because it is linked to the sixth ray. You know, first law under the fourth ray linked to the fourth law under the first ray. Look at that 1441. The second law under the second ray linked to the fifth law. Important numbers in themselves, 2 and 5, linked to the fifth law under the seventh ray. And those rays are often found together, especially in the healing arts. And then the law of service under the sixth ray linked to the sixth law under the third ray. Isn't that interesting? 3663. See how that happened. So we have a symmetry in two pairs of laws, the first and the fourth, with reversed rays, and the third and the sixth with reversed rays. 1441, 3663. Now we take in at last that about which so little has been said, and that is the law of the lower four, but some hints are given here. And this law relates to the wider group on the mental plane and is occult in nature, whereas the preceding law is more mystically rooted. The law of etheric union, and that's going to tell us something about the lower four. And we will have the union of the higher ethers with the lower. That becomes pretty clear. Okay. I can see that it would have been wise to consult this table before attempting to describe the law of the lower four, because it certainly does represent the connection with the cosmic, between the cosmic ethers and the lower ethers, and the vitalizing effect. The law of etheric union, the higher worlds and the lower worlds united. There, the fifth ray and the vitalizing factory, the idea here of the mastery of electrical energy and its use in vitalization. I mastered energy, for I am energy itself. The master and the mastered are but one. We are told in one of the fifth ray important paragraphs about a consummation achieved on the fifth ray. The male and the female form, I suppose, back to back, the angel and the warrior stand. Well, this is a symbol which also is connecting with the fourth ray, but if the male is the positive side here, then the higher ethers will be considered to be the positive factor, and the lower ethers, the negative factor or the receptive factor. At first, there maybe is not much interplay between them. I wonder about the back-to-back. It becomes more interactive when they face each other and the possibility of union really occurs. So, anyway, we have two different worlds adjoining each other, I would say. Okay. Two different worlds adjoining. The higher four, well, it's not only the monad and the triad that go forth as I was speaking. I think there eventually is the higher four ethers, including the logoic plane, going forth. We're told that four sons of God went forth, but only one returned. That is a little bit mystifying. The one who returns tends to absorb the lower four and find its place again in the higher four, and then there's a gradual reabsorption occurring. But this, the perspective taken here is all about the scientific, I'll use the fifth ray there, fiery energy from the fiery world, the scientific vitalizing. The world of the cosmic ethers is the fiery world. The world of the cosmic ethers is the fiery world. And that's where the fiery energy goes, and then there has to be this way of understanding how to vitalize the lower ethers. It's the lower four can be the lower four rays, but also the lower four ethers, it seems to be implied. Etheric union, union between what? It seems obvious, the union of the higher and lower, but four went forth, and only, I have another interpretation. Four went forth, but only one returned. And this has to do with the fact that eventually, all vehicles are composed only of atomic subplane. Subplane substance. Think of the etheric body. Eventually, it's made only of one. It's made only of one type of etheric substance, and maybe this is the case with the other vehicles as well. This is the etheric part of every plane, and here we have an eventual etheric body, let's see, which is composed only of atomic matter. Maybe we will have an emotional body which is composed only of the highest ether of the emotional plane, atomic substance. And eventually, perhaps, this is so for all the vehicles. This is one way to discuss the merging of the four into the two and the two into the one. So, earlier I was talking about principles, and now I can talk about planes. Earlier, I spoke of principles, and now of planes. So this is the one returning is the one of the atomic subplane substance. Well, we're told, you know, that as the initiatory process proceeds, the vehicles are made up of, what, 25% atomic matter, then 50%, then 75%, eventually 100% atomic matter. There are four, and yet only one remains eventually. So this is another interpretation of how the four can become the one. Well, the details of that I cannot grasp, but I get the idea, and we've been told that it's a very difficult law to interpret, but the words etheric union, I think, give a really big hint. And it's positive and feminine energy, back-to-back, usually not interactive, but eventually interactive. Usually not interactive, but later interactive. And the penetration of the higher ethers into the lower. the fiery energies of the fiery world, which vitalize the lower worlds through their fire, and a knowledge of fifth ray science, the science of electrical energy is needed to do this. Of electrical energy, occultly understood, is needed. Now, remember when he said that one of these laws was occult and one of them was more mystical. This is the occult law, and occultism and the fifth ray understanding of energy go hand in hand. Okay. Well, that's a little bit anyway. I've run over, of course, as is my wont lately. I tend to do that. But let's just say that we can call this the end of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries number 10A. And we're still on the same page, I believe, because it took that long to look through the implications. It's page 1220. And we will begin with Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries, 10B, page 1220.